My name is Shannon and I am an alcoholic. Housekeeping. We will only be recording and publishing the audio portion of this meeting. You can also sign up for email on our website at simpleactions.net. For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. All right. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. Anyone can use the chat function to send their phone number to the newcomer privately. Just kidding. Hold on. Okay, now they can. If there are any newcomers, you'd be able to unmute yourself as well. All right. Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step 11. Please welcome our panel this evening, Amy and Jordan. All right. I'm going to read the first paragraph on page 85. I will share my screen, and then our panel is going to share for a few minutes. All right, so page 85. Step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. It would be easy to be vague about this matter. Yet, we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. When we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Were we kind and loving towards all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Or were we thinking of what we could do for others, of what we could pack into the stream of life? But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. All right, you guys can go right ahead.
Jordan, do you want to go first this time?
I can if you want to switch it up.
Yeah. Sure.
My name's Jordan. I'm an alcoholic and very grateful to be sober and on a meeting with you guys tonight. So I wanted to, I guess, preface real quick with this. I told you guys a little bit about my story last week. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous and got sober pretty much right away. There were some relapses and slips in my first like 6 months, but got sober June 17th of 2009. And I've been sober ever since. I can't say that I've been happy, joyous, and free ever since though. And I think, you know, like we're alcoholics, but we're not exempt from life, right? Shit happens even to alcoholics after they get sober. but I had a lot of trouble meeting those sort of like circumstances and demands. And I definitely wasn't emotionally sober. And I hit sort of another bottom in an emotional bottom of sorts, if you will, in 2017 and kind of got like reestablished in recovery again. And I can honestly say, even though I've been through some shit since then, I can honestly say I've been like happy, joyous, and free almost the entire time since then, regardless of circumstances, you know, like circumstances, including losing my job. I lost my job last year as a result of COVID. I was laid off, you know, and I got through it. Like I got through that shit with this fellowship and with a higher power. And step 11 is definitely the, I don't know if I could say, I don't think I could say this 4 years ago, but today step 11 is definitely, it's the bedrock of my sobriety. It is like, it's where I live, man. It's like, it's where I go to connect with God and be still and quiet and okay. It's kind of my refuge. Cause like I said, there, even though we get sober, like shit still happens, you know, maybe even more so because life tends to get a lot bigger. You know, when you start letting people into it, it tends to get a lot bigger and a lot messier. So step 11 is kind of what I use to navigate that on a daily basis. And as far as some of the specifics of this paragraph, so I'm not sure that I got this the first time around in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I definitely got it the second time around. My primary purpose is to connect with other people. That's how it is that I stay inspired in this life. So that I have no desire to pick up a drink of alcohol and haven't had one for a really long time. The way that I maintain that is is by staying inspired spiritually and creatively and in my work life and in my relationship and in all aspects, you know? And so the way that I do that is by taking some time to reflect and do inventory. I've gotten to a point where I do this regularly on a daily basis, and it comes really easy to me. I get to the end of my day and I know if I owe an apology to someone because it's eating at me. Or I know if I need to call someone and tell them whatever secret I've been keeping for however long, because it's eating at me. I know if I've done something good, you know, like if I've helped someone out that day, cause I'm thinking about it. That's a selfish thought too. You know, like it's usually something egotistical, like, God, I was so helpful to that person. I did such an awesome job, you know? But it's all good. Like those pats on the back, as long as I don't let them go to my head, those pats on the back are actually a good thing. It's positive reinforcement. And it keeps me inspired, you know? That's the point of step 11, is to stay inspired. That's what I get the most out of this. Like I said, that sort of taking inventory every night, it comes really easily to me now because that stuff it's become very natural. That's a result of practice. That's the only thing that is. Like, I am not especially virtuous. I am not someone who is like constantly thinking of others or anything like that. Like all of this stuff that comes easily to me now is a result of practice. It's a result of doing it over and over and over again. And I gotta say too, like I avoided step 10 and 11 for a long time in sobriety, in Alcoholics Anonymous, like claiming to, you know, like be in here and doing this. I avoided those two steps for a long time for a lot of different reasons. I talked about it a little bit last week. I had a getcha God. I had a God that was just waiting for me to screw up. And I felt like step 11 and the reflection that goes along with it wasn't, I felt like it was always something where I would get into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection. That was my go-to. It's what I always ended up in. So I just didn't bother reflecting at all. And these days, like I said, the way that I think of it now is much more so, it's like my quiet place, my refuge, my get away from it all and like be okay. Kind of like what meetings were for me in the beginning. When I first got sober, meetings were like my safe place, you know? And step 11, as a result of step 11, I get to have that safe place, not only just in meetings, I get to have it wherever I am, whoever I'm with, whatever I'm doing, like however that goes, you know? And again, that's not a result of like me being some, you know, like awesome godly person at all in any way, shape or form. It's just a result of practice, of like taking the time to practice this on a daily basis and get to know my God, you know? And now I have this safe spot that I get to retreat to. It's my retreat, which I need on the daily, especially in times like this. So that's all I have on that paragraph.
All right. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Amy. My sobriety date is May 9th, 1994. And Simple Actions is my home group. Since this is my home group, I'm sure no one is going to confuse me with a godly person, unlike Jordan. But what I do know is that this way of life requires ongoing transformation of thought and attitude. I am a person who cannot hold a charge. And if lack of power is my dilemma, I need access to power over and over and over again. Because my default attitude is, it is my job in life to get my needs met and your job to help me out with that. And of course, you never do a very good job. So I have to become ever more demanding or gracious, as the case may be. And that gets me into trouble on a regular basis. So I get to step 11. Step 10, I'm clearing the channel because I need access to power. If my job is to grow in understanding and effectiveness, if my job is to make connections, like Jordan said, if I am to live inspired in spirit, if I am to live cultivating a closeness with power, I have to do this work to clear away what blocks the channel. So I find out in step 11, how good I'm practicing step 10. And the first thing that comes up is before retiring. And I've always been taught that the reason before retiring is the first thing that comes up in these step 11 practices is because the next day starts the night before. How well do I clean up what went on during the day? I have had lots of different nightly review practices in my recovering career. I would like to tell you that I've been a person that has been diligent. I have not. I am diligent when I am in pain. I'm diligent when I've made about 100 copies of something and they're in my desk drawer and I pull them out every night. And it's a reminder to me that I've got to do this. I'm diligent when I have a sponsor who's asking me on a regular basis, well, what do your 10 and 11 look like? Why are you complaining about X, Y, or Z? What's going on? And I'm pretty diligent about it when I'm having trouble with sponsees, which I'm always having trouble with sponsees if I'm not practicing 10 and 11, because what I bring to step 12 is me, myself, and I. I look at you, I decide what you need, and I decide to go ahead and give it to you because that's my job. I'm the most helpful person in the world. What I really am is controlling and a know-it-all. And so I will drag that mess into step 12 if I don't do 10 and 11. What I've been doing for the past year is I participate in a step 11 training. And it has been one of the most transformational experiences of my life. There are women all over the country. I have a step 11, former step 11 partner here tonight that I love. I do. That participate, and every 2 weeks we switch. And it's pulled out of a hat. It's you get whoever you get in whatever time zone. And the rule is you got to work it out because it's a spiritual practice. So there's no whining, there's no switching around, there's nothing. Work it out. God's in the mix, make it work. And so I get on the phone every night or early in the morning with the person that I have for the next 2 weeks and do the deal. And it is so beautiful to stand in truth before God with another person. And 2 weeks is too short of a time to get into codependent people pleasing. We're going to lie to each other, blow smoke up each other's butts because we want to be best friends. That doesn't happen. We never see these people. And 2 weeks is just short enough that you got to get in, you got to get it done, and then you have to move on to the next person. It is unbelievable, and it forces me to be accountable. The big book talks about how we are an undisciplined lot. These are the ways in which God disciplines us. And if I am to live, if I am to live free of self, free of substance, my efforts are required here. This is work. And I think I talked last week about, you know, my baseline selfishness. I've got a script. This is the way the world should work. This is the way relationships should work. This is what you should look like. You've been sober for 10 years. What the heck are you up to right now? You know, it fuels all of my judgments, all of this system of belief about how the world should be, based on my script. And I've got a basic dishonesty, which is, and if it doesn't work out according to my script, I'm going to have big problems, which in turn means you're going to have big problems with me. And then the fear always is I'm not enough. It's not good enough. I need to do more. I need more. All of the, you know, the little babbling brook that that runs underneath the heart of an alcoholic. So I go through these questions. I ask myself these questions specifically. And so if step 10 cleared out the channel between me and power, this is what stuffs the channel back up, fills it back up with power so that I can then have something to take out into the stream of life. And that piece about, God, help me not drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection. Man, I can roll around in that. It's the greatest excuse for more crappy behavior, honestly. You know, there's that saying that pee feels good when you pee on yourself while it's warm, but then once it gets cold, it gets really uncomfortable. Actually, I don't know how that fits in. I don't know why I started saying that. Let's just forget that part right now. So this is what I do. I really cannot put it together in my head why I brought that up. I'm sure it was brilliant though. Just go ahead and assume that I sounded great. So it's a good excuse for me to continue in bad behavior. Cause right. I'm a piece of dirt. I'm going to eat dirt. And I'm just going to continue with that. It's pride in reverse, but here's what's been happening. Since I am not running my nightly review and God is at this time, and I have partners who will help keep me on the straight and narrow, what's happening is that I am letting God love me where I am. Instead of waiting to be perfect for God to love me and for you to love me and definitely for me to love me, I am daring to allow God to love me exactly where I am. And as I grow in compassion for myself, it is not possible for me to behave without compassion towards you. And I mean, I'm a loudmouth. I'm really kind of a hard ass. If you want to hear the bad news about you, call me. I'm the one that'll tell you. But I am growing in compassion. God is refining my hard edges through this process. I am becoming what I think every single page of that book tells me. I am becoming a reflection of God's light and a mirror of God's love. And that's only because I do the work to clear away the me part, the self part, because what I'm a reflection of is just me, is me running the show, because I'm playing God. I'm deciding who you should be, what you should be, or if I'm not playing God, I'm making you a God. You're the higher power. And so if things are good with you, then I'm okay. And so that connection, direction, self-worth, protection, safe security, that thing that every human being is dying for, I become able to put that into the stream of life for you. Because in this process, I'm clearing away me and I'm letting God play that role in my life. This before retiring, I have an 11-step partner right now who lives in California. And so we talk at 11 o'clock at night. And you know, I come in hot all the time. By 11 o'clock at night, I'm a little chilled out. I'm feeling a little spiritual. I'm not so, you know, my friend Brad Everett used to call me AK-47 because I was just like, da, 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 da. By 11 o'clock at night, that's worn down a little bit. And I'm in the field, as Rumi says, out beyond wrongdoing and right doing, where we can all meet in silence. And this before retiring is a beautiful way to end the day. So that when I wake up the next morning and I've got a whole nother spiritual practice that's outlined for me here upon awakening, I'm ready to greet the day. I'm ready to experience some joy. This drains off the day. It drains off self. It drains off the power driver in me. It drains off. What it really does is it heals me from thinking that my feelings are the whole story. I can get really caught up in processing the day through how I feel, you know? And I'm, you know, there are people who say, feel your feelings. We're lucky to be able to feel our feelings. And that's all true. But my feelings are not the whole story. And doing these step 11 practices kind of peel that off of me so that I can look at things in the sunlight of the spirit. Because when I'm in the darkness of self, I do not see things very clearly. So that's it for that.
Thanks, y'all. You're over here cracking me up. All right. Second reading is going to be on page 86. I'm going to go ahead and share my screen. All right. On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course we take. Here we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought or decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We are often surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely upon it.
My name's Jordan. I'm an alcoholic. I got to tell you, these days, that's probably one of my favorite paragraphs in the entire book. And I think that's just because, like, I spent a really long time, like, sad. My alcoholism manifested at a very young age. I started drinking when I was like 14 years old, and I started smoking pot when I was 15 years old. And my drinking and drug use, like, changed the course of my life as a result of how young I was when I started it, right? And those are, like, those are consequences that I've lived with ever since, kind of thing. And I got to tell you, like, I used to get into some hardcore, morbid reflection about that stuff, man. Like, there was a point where I had gotten into the best engineering school in the country, and I fucking drank it away, you know? So I used to get real, real sad about that stuff, and go into, like, what I could have been and how wonderful it could have been and blah, 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 and all that. And spent years, even sober, even in sobriety, lamenting over that. I tend to be a lamenter. And you know, the thing about lamenting is that the memory, whether it's of a good situation or a bad situation, is always more intense than the actual situation itself. The way that I remember it is so much more dramatic, if you will. and that's how I am as far as my inner life and my inner dialogue and the shit that runs through my head on a regular basis, you know? and so I think practicing step 11 in the last couple of years has finally altered that a little bit. It still returns. I'll be completely and totally honest. I can still go into self-pity really, really easily. but this regular practice of step 11 has improved it. I don't get as depressed for as long anymore, you know? And this, like, this bit about inspiration, man. I like that it points out that we won't be inspired at all times, because I can use self-will to justify some pretty, you know, crazy shit, even with years and years and years of sobriety. but we get to start to trust our thinking again, you know? We get to start to lean into that after a while, after we practice and put in some work, you know, like Amy was saying, this is work. I've never been called an AK-47, but someone did at my last job. They called me a steamroller, which immediately popped into my head. I was like, huh. And I asked him about it afterwards, because we had a really good relationship, this person who called me a steamroller. And he's like, yeah, you know, like, you come in hot and heavy, Jordan, and you flatten everything out. But I got to tell you, the product behind you can be pretty smooth. And I was like, okay, I'll take it. I'll take it, you know. but we get to start to trust our thinking, you know, once we're in this place of, like, practicing God reliance, you know, once I'm out of that place of fear and control, where I gotta make sure everything is good. I gotta take care of me. I gotta make sure that I'm set up for success, you know. Once we start to leave some of that behind and walk into this place of God reliance and trust, I get to start to trust my thinking again. and I guess, like, the best example I have of this, I was working at a job in 2017 when I kind of, like, hit this, like, emotional sobriety bottom, which I've had some more. I'll mention that too. I've had additional emotional sobriety bottoms since then. none so intense, but This is definitely, it's not an overnight matter at all, by any means. but anyway, I was working at this job in 2017. I was working in the evenings, and I was an assistant manager at a conference center. And it was the first time that I had managed my own team. I had been like the manager on duty for a team. And I got to tell you, the first year and a half was fucking awful, dude, like absolutely terrible, because it was self-will all the way. I had to manage, I had to make shit go right. It was all going to fall on me if it didn't. Me. It was all about how I looked, and how it was all about how I appeared. It was all about appearance, and that was the only thing that mattered. And it sucked. It sucked to be me, because like, that's a lot of fucking pressure. It sucked to be my team, because I didn't give a shit about them. Like, it sucked, man. It was not pretty at all in any way, shape, or form. I had started that job in 2016, and in 2017, about a year and a half into it, is when I kind of hit this bottom, and I started working those steps again. And it didn't take long. It turned around pretty quick. It was within like 3 months, and I had gone from my job, my boss like avoiding me because he didn't want to give me more bad news about, you know, however else I was screwing up at this job, my employees were coming up to me. They wanted to come and hang out with me. They would come and like find me, and they wanted to come and hang out with me in the office and get my advice on something. My inspector would come in that night, and he'd be like, "Hey, how do you think we should do this set tonight, Jordan?" Because we used to flip the conference center. So we would flip between different sets, rounds and theater and all of that. And it's a lot of work. It's like intense work too. It's lifting tables and chairs all night long. and I would get out there and I would help them. And it completely turned around within a matter of 3 months, just by me abandoning that self-centeredness, that it's all about my appearance and the way that I look. And I started thinking I would have to do this every night. I would consciously have to like, okay, I'm going to set aside everything that I think is important about tonight, and I'm going to make it about my team members. And I'm going to ask myself as many times as I can possibly remember tonight, how is it that I can be of service to them? What is it that I can do to help them out tonight and make their lives easier? And I swear to God, I turned around. The situation turned around completely. So this idea, this attitude change from like, what is it that I can take to the situation, to what is it that I can bring to the situation? It literally works miracles, you know. It's miraculous. So anyway, that's all I got on that paragraph.
I am not a person who pauses a lot. I am very addicted to the notion of myself as being quick-witted, fast moving, low to the ground, you know, I'm on the ball. And pausing and praying doesn't really fit in with that vision I have of myself. And so what I've been led to start doing over the past 6 months or so is to stop wherever I am, not when I'm in trouble, but just stop and take a picture of where my feet are, text it to my sponsor, let her know I am where my feet are. I'm here in this moment. I'm entirely present. Because that's what 10, 11, and 12 do for me, is help me live in the present moment. You know, I want to live in the past, thinking about what I would have said, what I would have done, definitely about what you should have said, you should have done, or I'm living in the future in the big fantasy when I'm the most beautiful, powerful emperor on earth. Empress would not be good enough for me. Emperor on earth, and how it's all going to go down once that happens. And so these practices 10, 11, and 12, keep me right here, which is where God is. God's not in the story behind me. God's not out in the future in front of me when everything is still up in the air, uncertain, anything could happen. So I use this pausing throughout the day to ground myself into the present moment with God and with you all. What I know about myself as an addict is that what I crave more than anything else is connection. It's connection. I want to be connected. That's what relating is, connection, relationships. And I have spent many years thinking that the most important thing for me to get out of any conversation is agreement, is acquiescence from you, is the admission that I'm right. And what I know today is that the most important thing that I need to get is a connection in the moment, and that being right, frankly, is a dead fucking end. There's no way to go. I'm right. That's it. It's over. It ends. I'm building more walls, which keeps me isolated, the exact opposite of what I want. Or I'm amping up my ego to superiority. Again, that's not making me feel better than. That's making me feel separated from. The exact opposite of what it is that I really want. So I'll be where my feet are, or I'll text, pausing and praying. And I do it with people all over different time zones throughout the day, so that somebody might text back immediately, amen, or they're pausing and praying, or somebody might text back hours later because they're in a different time zone, whatever's going on, they're pausing and praying. And so in this way, I am not counting on magnificent Amy to be able to be the driver of my spiritual life. I am relying on connection with you all to help me get to God, to help me stay in God's presence, to help me stay inspired in spirit. Because left to my own devices, oh, I just remembered the thing about the peeing. That's what it is. Self-will feels great when you do it at first and it's working out, but then it kind of sours on you and it's not working out anymore. That was the whole thing. Anyway, whatever. That doesn't matter. But the point of this is that I cannot rely on self to get me to God. I am using the problem to fix the problem. It's never going to work. And I am a person who has adored my big brain my whole entire life. It's the worst to come here and be told you cannot rely on your own thinking, Amy. In fact, reliance on your own thinking is a large part of the problem here. And so I pause and pray frequently through the day with other people. Maybe it's going in the bathroom, maybe it, you know, getting down on my knees, whatever it is, because I will walk around on my own power with all my own ideas, thinking that I'm right all the time. And at the end of the day, I'll be exhausted because I've been self-will run riot. I haven't had access to power greater than my own. I've been self-propelling on my own power. And I'll be madder than hell because I've been trying to make connections with you in ways that are not healthy, in ways that just separate us even more. On Friday, I had to go over to a big fancy hotel and you know, I had my magnetic false eyelashes on and a whole shit ton of makeup. And I was, you know, trying to feel good about myself. But I go over to this place and, you know, there's still a part of me that's not good enough, not good enough. So I walk into the place and something perverse happens to me that when I feel not good enough, I will act like I am lording it over you. Like you can tell when I'm really insecure because I'll pull out all the polysyllabic words. You'll think, oh my gosh, I'm talking to Einstein. Or at least I want you to think, oh my gosh, I'm talking to Einstein. So I'm not feeling so great about myself. And I'm not really good with chit chat and beautiful people and beautiful places and blah, blah, blah. So I walk in there and I'm really not in fit spiritual condition. I made a couple of phone calls first. I didn't connect with anybody. So this is how God's voice frequently sounds like my voice. Since I didn't make a connection with the two people I called, I decided God was telling me I was good to go. So I went in there under steam and, yeah, they did not all jump and scatter the way that I wanted them to. They must not have known who I am. And I did not like it. And I became quite demanding. In fact, I was pretty icky. And after the first two people had walked away from me and said, I'm going to find somebody else for you to talk to, I remembered that I have this tool, this 11th step, where I can gain access to God's will for me and the power to carry it out. And so I took a picture of where I was and I sent it out and said, pausing and praying, I am dangerously close to mouthing off. And the people that I sent that to were right there with me, shoulder to shoulder in the fellowship of the Spirit. I was not alone. And although nobody was sad to see me go when I left the hotel that day, and I did have to make a phone call today to make an amends to one person, it didn't go as bad as it could have, because it could have gone really, really bad. My mouth, I leave scorched earth behind me. And it didn't happen that day. It didn't happen that day because I made a connection. Instead of my default being pick up a substance or screw on my thinking cap and get going really, really hard on how I can make this work, my default was I need help. And step 11 tells me how to get that help. That's all I have to say on that.
All right. Thank you, guys. We are going to move to reading 3. On page 87, we usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be, that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially for freedom from self-will and are careful to make no request for ourselves only. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. We are careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us have wasted a lot of time doing that, and it doesn't work. You can easily see why.
My name's Jordan. I'm an alcoholic. with a prayer, always, with a prayer. If I'm going to pick 3 words in the entire book that are important, to my spiritual practice is going to be with a prayer, right? there was something that came to mind while Amy was sharing, and I want to just like take a step back and mention it real quick. There's a point in How It Works where it talks about spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. And it's really, really, really important that that's like a precursor to all of this, right? there was a point in my sobriety where I wasn't worthy of anything, you know? And like Amy was talking about, like, I act like an asshole when I feel like I'm not worthy. That's where that asshole comes from, is me not feeling worthy. If you're any sort of perfectionist the way that I am, that doesn't help. This idea that I have to be here and practice this perfectly in order to stay here, it's not a good idea. It doesn't lead me to good places at all in any way, shape, or form. And like, the fact of the matter is, I'm not a religious person, but I study some religious literature these days. The fact of the matter is, like, some of the greatest people that have ever lived, like saints and shit like that, like, we're not perfect. It's really, really, really important to remember that we measure our progress here. It is not on a basis of perfection. It is on a basis of progress. And I take the time and I reflect, I pause, I reflect, I take the time to look at the progress. I don't use that as like a, I'm so great and now I'm going to move forward without God's help sort of thing. I've fallen into that trap quite a few times, I got to say. but it's really important that my measuring stick is progress. Because it's just as entrapping this idea of perfection and somehow this can be done perfectly. That can be just as entrapping for me, especially the longer that I've stayed sober. I'm actually more susceptible to that idea now than when I first came in. So with a prayer, I move forward and continue to practice. And these days, like on a good day, it's not hard to pray for freedom from self-will. And it's not hard to pray for others. But that's, you know, that's on a good day. And a lot of times too, there's another idea of sort of like this, I don't know, notion of self-love that I've come to, right? Which was a completely and totally foreign term to me just a couple of years ago. Like I, you wanted to talk to me about self-love. I was probably going to, you know, you remember the trick where you like crap in a paper bag and set it on fire and leave it on someone's doorstep? Like that's what I thought of self-love. Okay. but now a couple of years later with a little more practice, I have this idea that like I pray for, inspiration for myself. I pray for happy, joyous, and free for myself. And it sounds really selfish at first, right? But the fact of the matter is I'm a much more pleasant person to be around. I'm a much better version of myself for the other people around me when I'm happy, joyous, and free, like when I can live from that spot, you know, or that place of inspiration or whatever else it is, you know. The fact of the matter is, like, whether I like it or not, I show up as my best self in these rooms. and so like, I pray for that. I pray for being able to show up as my best self outside of these rooms as well. Cause like, I guarantee you, if you ask my boyfriend about like my spiritual barometer, wherever it is on any given day, like he's probably gonna give you some smart ass answer. Cause that's, you know, and that's a little bit on me and a little bit on him. but, those selfish prayers that I have are, you know, like they really are, in service to others. cause that's the way that God works. It's like a big circle, man. It really is all about the connection. And when I can show up like that in my life and that can be the thing that I'm passing on. Because I'm going to pass on something, whether it's a toxic attitude or a good attitude, I'm passing it on. So I might as well pray for a good one and try to make that what I'm passing on, you know? So anyway, that's all I got.
What quickens my spirit for these directions is the step 7 prayer, which has me say, I am willing that you have all of me, good and bad. Because what that lets me know is I don't even know what to do with my better impulses. You know, as I was saying earlier, I think I'm the most helpful person in the entire world. Anyone who works with me would tell you I'm the most controlling person in the world. A week ago, I was talking to one of my coworkers and I was saying, you know, our boss is such a jackass. He always thinks his idea is the best idea. And she looked at me and she goes, well, so do you. And I was really surprised to hear that. I really was. So I don't know what to do with whatever the best parts of me and the worst parts of me are, but the God of my understanding who created me knows what he created me uniquely to do. So if I show up in fit spiritual condition, you know, I'm ready to be put in the game. When I'm the one directing the game, when I'm the one saying, put me in, I'll do this, I'll make it happen. It's probably not going to end well for me or anybody else. And it has never turned out well for me to go to God with a wish list, like he's Santa Claus. And I think that that's probably, you know, one of the false ideas, flawed ideas that I've had about God in the past is that, you know, he's either Santa Claus making a list of who's naughty and nice, or he's Zeus and he's sitting up on a throne with a lightning bolt. I am certainly going to be one of the ones that gets jabbed in the ass. And that's not who God is. That's not who the God of my understanding is. The God of my understanding, actually the big book says it, that I can be standing in the presence of infinite power and love. And I don't think I'm that easy to love. And so infinite power and love sounds super duper good to me. That's who my higher power is. And I need infinite power. Because on my own power, I will go through a day, I'll blow through a day, and I will piss off every person that I've talked to during the course of the day. I really will, because I'm forcing my will. I'm trying to make things happen. I've decided in the world, according to Amy, what I should be doing, what you should be doing, and what it should all look like. And I'm not above manipulating or white lying, or I don't know why I'm saying white lying, just full on black all the way lying to get my way. There is still a liar, a cheat, a thief, I mean, really a thug living inside of me. And without these practices, I am liable to impose that on everyone around me. I still have a mind that does not appropriately respond to the daily stresses of life. Life on life's terms just does not really suit me most of the time. And my default is I'm going to impose my will, or I'm going to stand back, fold my arms and just say, nope, I'm not doing that. No, that's it. You cannot penetrate my defenses. I am psychologically armed to the teeth in those moments because I am busy defending my boundaries, which I think you're poaching on, or I am trying to, you know, maintain a little self-respect. And I mean, those are all things that are above my pay grade too. That's why I go to God and say, do with me what you will. And what I've been taught is that every page of that big book has directions and warnings and prayers and promises. And there are a lot of really short nugget prayers that even my super highway of information mind can grasp onto in a heated moment. And I will use those prayers, things like, thy will be done. God, please do for me what I cannot do for myself. God, please restore me to sanity. I mean, those things fit at all times, in all places. I am frequently insane. I am frequently running under, you know, the SS Amy masthead. And it's again, not going to end well. My ship always falters, always. And then, of course, I throw a little more self-will at it. You know, I mean, for me, it goes resentment, more demanding, fear, because now I'm scared. I'm scared that I've showed my tail. You're never going to love me. You're never going to accept me. I've ruined everything. As if I were making you love me and accept me in the first place. And when I say stay centered in this step, I know that it's not your job to love and accept me. I know that when I don't feel lovable and I don't feel acceptable, that's not a you on me crime. That's a me on me crime. And that can only be worked out between the God of my understanding and me. I cannot empower you all to walk around all day long, every day, with the job of making it feel like it's okay to be me on the inside. You don't have anything to do with that. And I barely have anything to do with that. My inside needs to be cleaned out, cleared out through these spiritual practices, through this form of spiritual hygiene, so that God can fill me up with the good stuff. You know, I'm not just doing these practices to rearrange all the crap. I'm doing these practices to face it and be rid of it. That's what step four tells me. I can face and be rid of it. I'm going to take that as a promise, because much in the fashion that my alcoholism is a progressive disease, I am discovering that my recovery is progressive as well. Yesterday, I was hiking. I mean, if you can even freaking imagine that. I hate the outdoors. I don't like fresh air. I'm sure there's bugs and dirt out there, but that's what I was doing. And I was walking down this trail and tears were running down my face because I was so humbled by the grace and beauty of God's world. The sun was on my face. I could hear the wind in the trees. I could smell the water that was just beyond the tree line. I mean, you all know me. You've never heard me say anything like that again. You know, I mean, I think like a rural adventure is anything less than a 5-star hotel. But I was weeping in Yorktown, Virginia, because I've done nothing to deserve the infinite power, love, and grace that I'm surrounded by. I haven't. I've kicked and screamed the whole entire way. And moving at the speed of pain, I've surrendered and I keep surrendering. And step 10 and step 11 are what keep that going on and on. You know, the description of entire psychic change, I don't know if it's in Spiritual Experience or early in the book, wherever it is, it talks about profound alteration to life. That's what an entire psychic change is. And so I ask myself, have I had a profound alteration to life? Now, I'm not going to tell you that it's all white as driven snow up in my head. It's not. But on most days, all the crap that's rocking up there does not come flying out of my mouth. And the truth is that I have a tender heart today. I want you to love me. I want to be lovable. And I want to be able to offer God's love back to you. I really do. If you had asked me when I first got sober, you know, what are your goals for this? Because I always have goals. I'm very goal oriented. I think that's a positive way to be. Actually, it's not. Because really, it's about the same thing as praying for specific things. Anyhow, I would never have told you that I wanted to be tenderhearted, that I wanted to be loving, that I wanted compassion and love and understanding to be the currency of my day. I would certainly have not told you that I wanted to adopt a posture of forgiveness, forgiving myself for doing the best that I can, and just one act of forgiveness after another for the world not being what I think it should be. I would never have asked for those things. And that appears to be what's coming my way through this practice. That's all I have to say about that.
Thank you, Amy. All right, we're going to try to wrap everything up here. First, the seventh tradition basket. I am going to paste the link in the chat. Seventh tradition states, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup / central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, word about safety, Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Announcements. Are there any AA-related announcements? I'm going to allow everybody to unmute. No? Okay. All right. Simple actions as a home group. If you are
We have supper and a speaker in 2 weeks. We should be announcing that.
Okay.
We have Jack D from Baltimore, Maryland. He is a vibrant, joyful, very animated young man. He is going to be our speaker on Monday night. I think it's April 12th. Is it April 12th? Somebody say yes or no.
It's April 12th.
Okay, right on. And obviously it's not supper and a speaker. You can sit in your house and eat, but we're having a speaker. And that's when it's going on, Monday, April 12th.
Good call. Thank you, Amy.
Alcoholic David. That sounds amazing. I can't wait to hear Jack D. Right here at Simple Actions. I might as well say that District 14, Norfolk, is having a concepts workshop on this Wednesday night. And we've got the wonderful Chris Wells from past delegate from Virginia. She's going to lead us through concept 3. We're doing that all through 2021 on the fourth Wednesday of each month. But the fourth Wednesday of this month happens to be 2 days from now. Come see us. You can find the link at tidewaterintergroup.org.
All right. Thank you, David. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, raise your hands. All right, sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available here after.
Shannon, we lost you.
Something happened, Shannon. You froze. All right. Well, we suggest everybody get a sponsor. If you don't have a sponsor, stick around after the meeting. People will be here in the Zoom room to talk to you. If you're shy, you can email info@simpleactions.net.